Good morning. It is good to see everybody here this morning. I do encourage everyone to keep all those folks that we mentioned earlier in our prayers, especially Sarah's dad, Mike, and also keep the family in your prayers. Going through a hard time right now, so keep them in your thoughts and prayers as well. The title of my lesson, as you can see on the screen, is Fear Not. You know, I'm impressed with how often our God sends the encouraging message to His people, fear not. In Genesis 15, verse 1, He told Abraham, or Abram at the time, He says, "Do not fear, Abram, I am a shield to you. Your reward shall be very great." Later, as he became Abraham, in chapter 26, verse 24, God again says, "I am the God of your father," talking to Isaac, "Abraham, I'm your God of your father Abraham. Do not fear, for I am with you." And then again in Isaiah, talking to Isaiah, God says, "Do not fear, for I am with you. Do not anxiously look about you, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. Surely I will help you." Unless we think that only God gave encouraging words to those of the Old Testament, we're reminded by Jesus himself in Matthew 10, verse 31. He says, "So do not fear, you are more valuable than many sparrows." And then Peter, writing in 1 Peter 3, verse 14, says, "And do not fear their intimidation, and do not be troubled." Folks, it is very clear to me that God does not want us living in fear of what might happen or the circumstances that surround us. And I mentioned several weeks ago that oftentimes we live, and I think Leo may have mentioned it, but oftentimes we were talking about this in class, and 95% of the stuff that we worry about never happens. And so why do we worry about it? But I know God knows us more and better than we do. But at the same time, I think we need to understand that there is the benefit of a trial. And now, some of you know that I'm kind of a history buff. I like church history, but I also like world history, particularly the world wars. And in the years leading up to the Second World War, the British government was worried. If in the event of war, the German air forces launched a major air offensive against London, the British military command believed that there was nothing they could do to stop it. And this, a lot of the information I'm giving this morning comes from a book entitled David and Goliath by Malcolm Gladwell. But in his book he says, as a result, the government worried that the people in London would panic, stop working, flee to the countryside, and all the industrial production would grind to a halt, and that they would lose the war as a result. And they contemplated building a massive network of underground shelters, set up several mental hospitals outside the city to handle a flood of mental cases once the bombing actually started. It's interesting that the Germans had the same theory. They believed that in bombing London, they would destroy the morale of the British people. And the bombing did arrive, and it was horrific. And if any of you ever have any interest in this, Netflix has some very good documentaries on not only the concentration camps, but also in what took place in World War I and World War II. And so if you're a history buff and you want to catch up on some of that stuff, I encourage you to do so. But as you can imagine, and I find it hard to imagine, but I saw pictures of it, so I believe it. Over 1 million buildings were destroyed by the Luftwaffe. But it's interesting that the widespread panic never happened. And the mental hospitals never saw a wave of patients and were eventually repurposed for other uses. So ask yourself the question, what was learned by this? First of all, the bombing produced three groups of people. Unfortunately, first the dead, then the near misses who were traumatized by the event, and then the remote misses who at times came out of the experience with a sense of triumph and a sense of pure happiness. In the book, Gladwell says, he says, we are also prone to be afraid of being afraid. And the conquering of fear produced exhilaration. In the midst of the blitz, as you know, any of you who've studied World War II, one of the words that you'll hear over and over and over again is blitzkrieg. I mean, it was just, and of course the Russians returned the favor, okay? And it was unbelievable to see, to actually witness, at least on camera, the amount of bombardment that took place during World War II. But he notes, he says, in the midst of the blitzkrieg, or in the blitz, a middle-aged laborer in the button factory was asked if he wanted to be evacuated to the countryside. You see, he had been bombed out of his house twice. But each time, he and his wife had been fine. He refused. He said, what? And miss all this? Not for all the gold in China. There's never been nothing like it. Never and never will be again. In the face of adversity, when a lot of people run, other people step in and do everything they can to help out. And sadly, we witnessed that a little bit closer to home, maybe too close to home, in Vegas this week. There were many people who, regardless of only thinking about their own lives, were concerned about other people and getting them off that field. And some of them, unfortunately, died in the process. And so, I want us to think for a few moments about just the example of David, okay? When David encountered Goliath, he was a young man still, with a past of near misses, much like our good friend, the button factory man. And in speaking to Saul, the king, he says, your servant was tending his father's sheep when a lion or a bear came and took a lamb from the flock. I went out after him and attacked him and rescued it from his mouth. And when he rose up against me, I seized him by his beard and struck him and killed him. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. 1 Samuel 17, verses 35 and 36. As a result, David was not traumatized, but rather he was confident. And he says, your servant has killed both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them. Now we know he's talking about Goliath. And folks, what I want us to understand is courage is not something that you already have that makes you brave when tough times come. Courage is what you earn when you've been through tough times. And so we have a choice. We can be confident or we can be crushed. The challenge that we all face is refusing to allow our near misses to make us even more apprehensive and fearful. And one example of this is in our culture, current culture, is that there are many young people who saw and experienced firsthand the divorce of their parents and are now fearful of marriage. A number of those who went through the Great Depression lived in fear of losing it all again. It is so easy to let something that happened in our past to result in us becoming very fearful of the future. So how do we handle these near misses in our lives? Because for every individual who comes out of a trial with courage and confidence, there are many more who exit fearful, broken, or forever wounded. What we need to understand is it is in our control. See, the good news is that we make the final decision whether we will be fearful or confident, whether we will exit trial stronger or weaker, strengthened or shattered. James 1 verse 4 says, "And let endurance have its perfect result, so that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing." And the Hebrew writer tells in Hebrews 10 verse 35, he says, "Therefore do not throw away your confidence." Now, I find this last statement by the Hebrew writer very interesting, because so often we talk about people losing their confidence as if confidence is something that can just disappear, that it can walk off on its own or just leave us. Yet this verse reminds us and is encouraging to us, because it says that our confidence cannot leave without our consent and permission. Remember, when we face any trials in this life, do not fear losing your confidence. Rather, concentrate on what you are gaining. And one of my favorite books in the Bible, as you know, it's not my favorite, because obviously the Gospel of John is. But the book of Romans is one of my favorites. I guess the Bible is my favorite altogether, but of the books in the Bible, Romans is one of my favorites. And in Romans 5, verses 3 through 5, Paul, writing to the church in Rome, says, "And not only this, but we also exult in our tribulations, knowing that tribulation brings about perseverance. And perseverance, proven character. And proven character, hope. And hope does not disappoint. Because the love of God has been poured out within our hearts through the Holy Spirit who is given to us." Don't lose your confidence. Don't lose your hope. And it helps to remind ourselves and ask ourselves the question, what is my ultimate goal? What is my ultimate goal? If staying physically healthy and alive as long as possible is my overall goal, then this will undermine my courage and confidence. Paul was a very courageous man. And I see his courage tied to the fact that he was not afraid to die, because he realized that death would result in him being with the Lord. And I want you to remind yourselves, as well as myself, what exactly Paul had to say. Turn back to Philippians chapter 1. Because these words were given to us as encouragement, and we need to take them to heart. In Philippians 1, chapter 21, verse 21, he says these words. He says, "For to me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. But if I am to live in the flesh, this will mean fruitful labor for me, and I do not know which to choose. But I am hard pressed from both directions, having desired to depart and be with Christ, for that is very much better." Folks, we need to understand, just as the Apostle Paul did, that while we're still breathing, God can use us. But the great reward is yet to come. If God chooses to take me home tomorrow, so be it. But in the meantime, I'm going to do everything in my power to be of service to Him. And that was Paul's attitude. He knew that the reward that awaited him was so much greater than anything he could possibly experience here on this earth. And yet he also knew, because of what Christ had done for him, that he needed to be a blessing to others and share that with them, so that they too would have that hope of heaven. And so, how do we do that? Well, first of all, stay close to God. He who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will abide in the shadow of the Almighty. I will say to the Lord, my refuge and my fortress, my God in whom I trust. For it is he who delivers you from the snare of the trapper and from the deadly pestilence. He will cover you with his pinions, and under his wings you may seek refuge. His faithfulness is a shield and bulwark. You will not be afraid of the terror by night, or of the arrow that flies by day, of the pestilence that stalks in the darkness, or of the destruction that lays waste at noon. 1,000 may fall at your side and 10,000 at your right hand, but if shall not approach you. For I have made the Lord my refuge. Folks, the idea in these verses is not that one will be immune from trials. And this is how the devil misinterpreted verse 11 in chapter 4, verses 6 and following. Rather, it means that nothing can really hurt who we are on the inside. Nothing can touch our soul. Nothing can touch our relationship with God. Luke 11, verse 4. And it is the realization that with God, nothing can truly harm the real us. I always loved a lesson that a good brother of ours did years ago, back when I was young and in college. And at that time, he was very popular in speaking to youth groups and college students and so forth. And one of his greatest illustrations was that he would use was he said, I want you to imagine that you're on an airplane. And he said, you're at 30,000 feet. Now keep in mind, this is back in the 70s, okay? Back in the 70s, they could still smoke on planes. Okay, so this makes a whole lot more sense when you keep that thought in mind. And in this illustration, he told us, he said, I want you to imagine. He said, you know, a lot of people, they get really nervous when they fly anyway. And he says, the pilot comes on the intercom, he says, we've lost our right engine. And he said, we can fly for a while. But he said, you need to prepare because we may crash. And as you can imagine, the whole plane starts to panic. And all the stewardesses, flight attendants as they're called nowadays, trying to calm everybody down. Next thing you know, you hear the pilot come on the intercom and he says, we lost. And we're definitely going to crash. And one lady is so frustrated, she throws her drink and it just lands on a gentleman who happens to be smoking a cigarette. And you know, alcohol and ashes and cigarettes don't go together for more than one reason. And the cabin catches on fire. And just in a matter of just a few seconds, the plane is spiraling out of control, and you're headed into the ground. The plane hits the ground, explodes, and you die. He said, 1 second later, you're in heaven.
because you're in Christ.
See, all we focus on is how bad the thought of a train going down would be. And some of you in here, I know, hate that, hate even thought of flying, okay? You see, that's not the worst thing that can happen to us. Yeah, we're going to die if that plane crashes. But the greatest thing that will ever happen to us is going to happen to us in an instant. And that is, we're going to heaven. We're going to be in paradise. If we're a faithful Christian. And Paul understood that. Paul clearly understood that staying close to God was really what was important. And we need to remind ourselves that I already died with Christ. In Corinthians, 1 Corinthians 5, or 2 Corinthians 5, verses 14 and 15, Paul writes, he says, "For the love of Christ controls us, having concluded this, that once, that one died for all, therefore all died. And he died for all, so that they who live might no longer live for themselves, but for him who died and rose again on their behalf." The idea here is that due to my sins, I truly deserve to have died and have been condemned long ago. Yet Jesus mercifully died for me. And I was given the opportunity to hear the gospel, believe, repent, confess, and submit to baptism. And therefore, whatever life I have left here on earth is not to be lived for me. Rather, it's to be lived for him. That I am living on borrowed time. Time that I have because of the grace of God. So whatever good things that come my way, it is all undeserved. And whatever trials and hardships come my way, it is far better than being dead and lost and suffering in torment. What really is there to fear about the future, folks? Because the future may be challenging, but it is equally a future that is absent of eternal torment, a future that includes the glorious hope of being with God and all the saved in heaven forever. The psalmist wrote in Psalm 118, verse 6, "The Lord is with me, I will not fear. What can man do to me?" Don't live this life in constant fear. Live your life with the hope that you have in Jesus Christ. And make the most of your life by serving God in every aspect of your life. Don't let fear paralyze you into doing nothing. But control it. Be confident. And use the blessings that God has given you to be a blessing to others. This morning, if you're not a Christian, if you're on that plane that crashed, the outcome would not be paradise. The outcome would be torment. I don't wish that on anybody, folks. But Jesus tells me that some people will not heed his word. But I want to encourage you, if you know your life's not right with God, do what you need to do to make it right. Because an eternity without God is truly hell. In the worst way you can imagine. If we can help you in any way this morning, we would encourage you to respond as Jimmy leads us an invitation song.